only you are going to know if kind of the path that you're going on feels right to you. And so I think just kind of being able to step back and then kind of assess that and be honest with that portion can make a huge difference in your life.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am very excited to introduce our guest for the day, Zach Quick. Zach, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So everyone, Zach is a self-storage owner and operator based in Northwest Arkansas. And if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that self-storage is one of my personal favorite asset classes. And so really excited to talk to Zach. Zach, why don't you give us a little bit of a picture about what your life was like before real estate and why you decided to transition to being a full-time real estate investor?
Sure. So growing up, I don't even know how to describe it. I always kind of knew that I would do something, whether that means business ownership, investing in some way, shape, or form. So my wife and I started buying, we initially bought like a house hack, so to speak. It had a garage apartment probably 3 years out of college, and then kind of did the small residential thing from there, had almost 28 units. And then about 4 years ago, kind of completely pivoted into self-storage. So I guess prior to real estate wasn't much other than working a lot out of college, but I kind of always had a bug in me and I knew I would in some form or fashion. So yeah.
Okay, great. So yeah. And do you know what cultivated that kind of bug early on in life for you?
It's a good question. I think I was always pretty independent, knew that I wanted to work for myself in some way, shape, or form. No one really in my family was an entrepreneur, so to speak. And so it was somewhat foreign, but I knew that I just kind of wanted to control my own destiny and time, I think. So didn't really know how or what that would look like. And I think about 3 or 4 years into corporate life, I quickly realized that that probably wasn't going to be a long-term solution for me.
Yeah.
And so then just kind of figured it out blindly from there. So
totally, like so many of us do. Yeah. And, you know, just to circle back on that point, and not sure how much you care to expand on this, but what was it that made you know that you wanted to control your own destiny and take time, et cetera? Was it like watching others around you? Can you remember anything about that?
I don't know that there's like a pinpointed time for me. I mean, my dad worked at the same job for 30 plus years, and not that I saw anything wrong with that, just for whatever reason, deep down, I kind of knew that probably wasn't going to be me. And so I don't know. I think just probably the natural churn of society kind of telling you that you are supposed to get a job, supposed to do this. And I kind of maybe just naturally rebel against what I'm quote unquote supposed to do maybe. So that may not be a very good pinpointed answer, but I don't know that I have a specific moment per se or anything similar, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I mean, I just thought I'd see if you happen to know. I mean, I know that for me, like I watched my dad and I mean, I bless his heart. He's totally provided a stable financial life for me and my sister coming from India. And I know that also he was, you know, bored with his job, which was a very good, high paying job, but it just wasn't, it was boring to him. And I just remember being like, that's the last thing I want in life is to be bored. And nothing wrong with it, right? Like we're different people. We have different personalities. And so anyways, I was just curious if there was anything that came to mind. But so let's talk about your first deals. Like, so you started in residential real estate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my wife and I were relocating. I was a Target store manager. We were getting ready to move to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it was a relocation for a position. And so that had a kind of a quick timeline. We'd been really thinking and talking about getting like a duplex, buying half and renting out the other side. But all of the duplex that were listed, and with it being a short timeline, none of those really were what we were looking for. And we're getting ready to kind of stop looking, for lack of better words, and maybe find something to rent just because we had to be there at a certain time. But found a house near the store that I was going to be working at that had a garage apartment that was already fixed up in a nice area. And I kind of checked all the boxes, and even with it being detached, it almost made it a little bit more, I don't know, attractive in some ways. Being, you know, they weren't above us or beside us. They were literally outside and through a different door and above the garage. So yeah, it was a primary house, put very little down just because it, you know, you don't really have to for your primary. And moved in, had no idea how to, well, kind of shortchanged the lease portion, but we got really lucky in that it was a college student who was getting her master's, and it was just her, and it was kind of the perfect first tenant for my wife and I. So yeah, that was the first one. Lived in the main house and rented out the garage apartment.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, classic house hacking strategy, which is how, I mean, it's such an important strategy to know that it's out there for those of you who are thinking about getting started. That's definitely how I mean, it's one of the first deals that I did was a house hack. And yeah. So, and you went into that with knowing that you wanted to, I mean, did you know that term back then?
Yeah. I'd been browsing the BiggerPockets forums for a long time and kind of had been looking at a duplex in where we were living before, but knew we probably weren't going to be there much longer because of my job. And so didn't pull the trigger, obviously. And so, yeah, it that one worked out really well. And then,
and just really quick, just for our listeners who aren't, you know, because maybe some people are listening for the first time or new to the show, can you just describe or define what house hacking means for folks?
Yeah, really just buying a house that you're going to live in, whether that's half of a duplex, half of a townhome, whether it's upstairs of a two-story duplex, or and really just using your own primary residence to rent out a portion of it to help cover some of your mortgage or all of your mortgage. That's probably the simplest way to put it. And so the rent wasn't enough to cover all of our mortgage, but it certainly offset a lot of it. And so in a lot of ways, kind of the perfect ideal would be to, you know, cover, basically live for free, for lack of better words. So have it. And then a lot of people will do that just because they can do a 3-5% down payment, because it is a primary home, you are living in it, and then hold it for a couple of years and then move out and do it again. It's the easiest way, in my opinion, and probably the smartest way to start to get into real estate, to have your tenant literally nearby. You get to kind of learn easily and cheaply too.
Yeah, totally. Awesome. So you did your first house hack, and then I know you did residential for a while. How long did you do residential before transitioning to self-storage?
Yeah, probably about 3-4 years. We eventually moved back to Southeast Kansas, and we kept that Tulsa one for 3-4 years, but and then primarily bought there, just kind of got up to about 28 units and felt stuck, for lack of better words. And some of that was limiting beliefs on money, partners, et cetera. But I just didn't see for us, and obviously it was some limiting beliefs of what was next for multifamily for us. And for whatever reason, I was on a vacation, saw these bright blue self-storage doors, and literally felt like God was tapping me on the shoulder saying, hey, look at this. And so that kind of spurned us to kind of research and kind of completely pivot into that. So happy to dive into any portion of that you want.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's interesting, right? Limiting beliefs. And in this case, it seems like, you know, maybe you're aware that you could have grown your residential real estate business, but you also took this sign and, you know, went with it. So limiting beliefs, for those of you who aren't familiar with that term, are these subconsciously held beliefs that we, all of us have them on some level, and breaking through them is often important to getting to the next level. And, you know, for me too, for example, when I started deciding to be an entrepreneur, I had limiting beliefs around real estate. Like, I didn't think that real estate was going to be my pathway to entrepreneurship, even though I had like so much experience in real estate already, both from a professional standpoint and building a portfolio, or at least the beginnings of a portfolio. So I just appreciate that you mentioned that, because it's an important thing for us all to be aware of, as kind of understanding what our limiting beliefs are at any given moment.
Yeah. And I think I'll just to touch on that too, I think that, and limiting beliefs weren't 100% of it, but also some of it was like, whatever that next step was, just didn't feel 100% right in my gut, even though from the outside looking in, like, you know, you've gotten to this point doing that exact strategy, like, what's wrong with doing, not that there was anything wrong per se, it just didn't jive with me and kind of what we were looking for. So anyways, yeah, some limiting beliefs, but then also just kind of listening to your gut on what you maybe really want from that aspect.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's important to listen to as well. Awesome. So you decided to look into self-storage, and what did you find? What did you like about that space, and why did you decide to pursue it? This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was really just trying to run them like businesses and simplifying residential. So no one should take offense to this because I was in it. But a lot of residential is, you know, if you buy it right, fix it up, and then kind of hope that nothing happens for the next year. Hope that you don't have to redo everything that you just fixed up when they move out. And so to me, it just felt slower. I'm not a patient person in general. And so I think that while storage is definitely more work per se than residential, there's a lot more moving pieces. And I actually kind of liked that. And there's a lot more levers to pull. And so anyways, I think that kind of approaching it almost like, and again, you should be approaching your residential like a business as well. But there are a lot more moving parts in the day-to-day operations of a storage facility. And so I liked that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm, for sure. It sounds like it gave you the feeling like you could add more value quicker with the moving parts.
Yep. And that sums it up, is that I felt like I maybe had some sort of advantage in any, and not that that sounds, you know, I had no storage experience. So a little bit of willful belief that you can do something that you haven't done. But yeah, definitely. I think that there are a lot more specific day-to-day demand driving events that can kind of impact your value in storage. That's a lot harder to do with residential, especially for me. So
cool. Yeah. I mean, would you care to dive into any of those levers?
Yeah. So the biggest thing is just the whole customer experience and taking yourself through that aspect. So is there a nice website? Oftentimes we'd be looking for ones that don't have a website at all, or maybe like, even if it's pretty, if they can't click and rent when they want to, then it's really all it is pretty and doesn't really serve much of a purpose. And so from an automated standpoint, can someone click and rent and move in 10, 20 minutes later? Are you answering the phone when you need to? As much as websites are important, still the majority of our rentals today come over the phone. Are there some capital improvements that can be made that will kind of just give the place a facelift? Probably the biggest thing is, are they pricing correctly? If your 10 by 10 box is $10 cheaper than the guy down the street, why? And be honest with yourself, why? Is it because you like to be 100% full just because it makes you feel good? I mean, a lot of owners will operate their business to occupancy instead of revenue. And that's probably the biggest driver of value, is just current storage owners who don't want to raise prices and don't want to have those demand driving portions be as high as they can. And so that's the biggest portion of it, is a lot of them will be happy just being 100% full. But when you think about it on the opposite side, if someone walked into your store and they asked you to buy something and you told them, oh, I don't have anything, I have nothing available, like, how good of a merchant or a retailer are you? Not very good. You're turning away people that are willing to pay higher prices. So trying to think about it from all those aspects.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. And when you manage your units, are you doing the property management yourself and the construction yourself?
So yeah, so we manage all of our own properties. We have on-site managers. I manage the on-site managers. But another thing with storage is that there's a variety of different ways that you can manage it. So if it's I have a site right now that doesn't have an office, and it was constructed that way, but it primarily caters to boat and RV. And so it really wouldn't make a lot of sense to have an office there. And so we've managed it remotely. Just have someone that is your quote unquote boots on the ground that will mow, spray weeds, do any light maintenance that's needed. And if a customer needs to meet with someone, they can. But oftentimes they really don't need to meet with someone. As long as they have all the information to get in, know which unit they are, then they can do it. So we've done hybrid approaches like that. But yes, we've generally speaking like to have a property that's large enough to support either a part-time manager or a manager that can manage a couple facilities at once. So, yeah.
For sure. Yeah. That's awesome. And do you use any sort of like online booking system to help support, you know, having 24-hour booking available?
Yep. There's a variety of self-storage softwares that will do that. And most of them will have like a website that integrates directly with it. I can, if anyone wants to know who I'd recommend, some of it's property size, dependent on how much revenue your site's doing, I'd be happy to share. But yeah, to me, that's, if you're considering doing a site without one, I think you're insane. So
for sure. Yeah. Cool. And so what do you think it was that allowed you to make that transition from residential to self-storage? Was it, you know, because it's a big move. And can you talk about that pivot?
Yeah, I think having a supportive wife certainly helps. And then I think we did, we did probably 9 to 12 months of research and then bought the first one with just our own money. And so it was our necks on the line. We since will take equity partners on different properties now that we've kind of proved ourselves and proved the model. But I think honestly, the big portion of it was we felt comfortable with the finance portion of it. You know, here were the last 2 years of revenue that the current owner was doing. And we felt pretty darn confident that we could manage at least to the level that he was doing. And so barring anything major happening, I think that we just felt pretty confident that we could continue the same level of service. And obviously we weren't going to buy it unless we thought we could improve it truly. So, and then eventually you just have to take the leap. I didn't exactly sleep great that first month or two, but you go through all of that exercise to really try and put yourself in a position to make a big change within the property itself. So
yeah, for sure. And what would you say was causing that stress like the first month or two?
You know, anytime that something's new to you, I mean, you're rolling out different options to tenants, you're going to get pushback from them. So, you know, there will always be the customers or tenants that say, well, we've always done it this way. Why can't I continue to do it this way? And so you, whether you've done it once or whether you've done it 100 times, there's always that little voice in the back of your head like, well, we could do it this way or that way. But deep down, you know what was in your business plan, what's going to be best for the property long term. And so kind of sticking to your guns. And when it's the first time, it's hard to know what your guns are, for lack of better words. So I think that that was probably the biggest portion of it. And this specific property, there was a few things right at the last minute, like the owner using a lot of storage for himself and then using that as kind of a prepaid credit that at the 11th hour, you can't really do a lot about. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a deal breaker by any means, but anyways, yeah.
Interesting. Great. Well, any other, I don't know, words of wisdom, closing thoughts that you want to share with the listeners before we start to wrap up for today?
No, I really think the biggest thing is just to bet on yourself. I don't know how else to say it. And that sounds very generic advice, but only you are going to know if kind of the path that you're going on feels right to you. And so I think just kind of being able to step back and then kind of assess that and be honest with that portion can make a huge difference in your life.
Awesome. Yeah, totally. I think that's so important. And, you know, what tools did you use to be able to bet on yourself?
Probably overconfidence, but I think just kind of having, and granted, I still had, my wife and I both had our W-2s. And so, you know, we still had a backdrop or safety net, so to speak, of some sort. Just kind of having the gumption or realize that you feel like you can just figure it out one way or the other. Like most of the time, us real estate investors aren't that smart. So I think most of the time that we can figure it out just like the guy before you did. So
for sure. Awesome. Yeah. Lots of important lessons in your story, Zach. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. Would you please take a moment to tell the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you'd like to share?
Sure. And thank you for having me on. ZachQuick.com is probably the easiest place. ZachQuick.com.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Zach. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com. luxe-cap.com for tons of free educational content to further your success.